Welcome to Stop the Machine, Compassion in World Farming's campaign to end factory farming, with me, Julie Smith. In this episode, we're at Wilderness, where Compassion CEO Philip Limbury is in the book tent with fellow science communicators from Bloomsbury Sigma Publishing to explore what it takes to survive on planet Earth. The talk, the science of survival. But Wilderness is known as the food festival, and according to Alice, who I met over lunch at Petersham Nurseries, it's about much more than what's on the plate at the Angela Hartner or Ottolenghi banquets.
Well, we've been here since yesterday, and obviously there's incredible food absolutely everywhere, and we had a wonderful opening night banquet. But a lot of the talks are all coming back to the impact of farming and the impact of everything that we're doing on this planet and how sustainable it is. We listened to a talk yesterday where they said, you know, we always talk about GDP as being a measure for growth. Why do we always have to grow? Why can't we be about being sustainable and actually just sustaining where we are? We love going out, and we're big meat eaters. We have a really great local butchers that we absolutely love. But we weren't as aware of the ethics and things and the impact on the environment, and now we're far more aware of trying to get meat free on certain days of the week and eat a lot more vegetables. And actually, like the opening night banquet that we went to, everyone was like cooing over the lamb, and I was there being like, oh my god, the tomatoes are incredible. You know, there's so much creativity in the British food scene now, I think, is like unparalleled in the world. So it's about keeping that and that pioneering spirit, but marrying it with a responsibility for, you know, the future. And, you know, we want our kids to be able to be eating like the same food that we can. So you've got to be conscious of it.
And then it was time for science. And Mike was already on the hay bales in the book tent.
So Mike, you're at Wilderness, presumably to listen to the music and eat some good food.
It's a lot more kind of a relaxed vibe than other festivals, so I'm really enjoying it. I'm a zoologist in background, so particularly kind of Helen's talk about de-extinction and a few more other talks about survival and things like that are of particular interest to me. So yeah, I thought I'd kind of stick around here. I think there's a lot of kind of ethical questions around obviously food and consumption of animals and things like that as well, and it's a really kind of interesting debate and dynamic around that, definitely.
I found Philip waiting to go on stage, soaking up the vibe.
To be honest, I'm finding it a huge energy boost being here at Wilderness, seeing so many people that are switched on to the new reality of food, the fact that we've got to think more deeply about food, that we've got to think about where it's coming from, what's going into it, how the animals are being treated, and that in doing that we can get really good tasty produce that's better for the farm animals, better for wildlife, and better for our families. To me, it's a fantastic venue here and great people.
So we've got a whole afternoon of people talking about these issues from different angles, aren't they? And it's packed.
People seem to be fascinated by some of the issues that are being talked about here, about food, about the environment, about conservation, and about animal welfare. I'm really looking forward to speaking to an audience. I feel a little bit of a fish out of water standing here in a suit without the tie, I should add.
There are plenty of sequin tents that you can go and get yourself glittered up.
Now that would be amazing, and I would feel more at home that way with all the people walking around in wellies and fancy dress, and some of them not wearing very much at all.
With Compassion's Extinction and Livestock Conference coming up on October the 5th and 6th, the first ever to explore the impact of livestock production on the future of life on Earth, for a moment I could see the future.
How amazing would it be to get these people to the conference in October?
Well, I think the people here that are so switched on to the issues are just the kind of people that should be coming to our Extinction Conference in October. You know, there we're going to be talking about that synergy between the way we produce food and wildlife and what it says about our food future, that we have to save wildlife, that we have to stop being cruel to farm animals if we are to have a food future, if we are to have a planet that is worth handing over as a legacy to our children.
With time and space to think and chat over this long weekend in Wilderness, the books tent was packed with people discussing science, food and environment.
So for me, de-extinction isn't just about bringing back the dead, it's very much about helping the living.
Helen Pilcher is the author of Bring Back the King, the new science of de-extinction, and had just come off stage in the books tent.
So if you choose a species to bring back from extinction, if you choose one very, very carefully, then it actually might help the environment. So living things are part of ecosystems, and when ecosystems begin to crumble, then the vital roles that they perform start to disappear also. So if you choose a particular extinct species that plays a particularly important role in the environment and you bring it back, it could have a positive effect. So it could be we bring back the woolly mammoth. Now the woolly mammoth is a really interesting one because it was basically this enormous gardener. It fertilised the wastelands of northern Europe by producing prestigious and huge amounts of dung, by trampling saplings and creating habitat for other animals. It was a keystone species. So people argue if you bring it back, perhaps it could help these wastelands become more biodiverse. Turn scraggy, unproductive, mossy tundra into something that is richer and greener and full of life. So it's a very controversial thing to say, but I actually think de-extinction could be a tool for conservation.
I asked her what kind of habitat a T-Rex would find these days, and if that was really the point.
Yeah, so if the ecosystem that supported that animal has really gone, then there isn't a strong argument to bring it back. And a lot of people are worried that if you de-extinct an animal, it could be at the expense of species that are clinging onto life. And I absolutely agree with Philip that we really should be focusing on saving the animals that we've got. That's our first priority. But what's interesting is some of the tools that are being developed to bring species back from extinction can equally be applied to endangered species that will go without our intervention. So there are species out there that are so desperately endangered that even though we look after them and we protect them and we do everything we can for them, it's not enough. They will go. So the northern white rhino is a great example. There are three of these animals left, a grandfather, a mother and a daughter, but they're too old, too ill, too related to breed naturally. So they're practically extinct anyway. Now I think it's really important that we don't give up on them. They were genetically unique. They had a distinct ecological role. We need to stop people from killing them if we do bring them back, but I don't think we should give up on them. And the same techniques that you could use to de-extinct maybe the woolly mammoth or the passenger pigeon, the same suite of methods could be applied to endangered species. So I don't see de-extinction and conservation as being either or opposite sides of the same coin. I think they could go hand in hand, and I don't honestly see de-extinction being this massive thing that will take over and swamp conservation, but I do think in some very niche circumstances it could play an interesting role.
At a place like Wilderness, there's a lot of messaging around climate change, slow food, field to fork. How important is it that you're actually here where, you know, coming to listen to you speak may change people's minds?
I think the most important thing when we have any new or controversial technique that's being developed, and de-extinction is controversial, is that as a society, we should discuss it. People have knee-jerk reactions to de-extinction. It's a Marmite thing. You love it or you loathe the idea. But if you don't listen or delve into the arguments that surround it, how can you make an informed choice? And this science is being developed. De-extinction isn't out there now. This is very much science and development. We're not about to see a herd of woolly mammoths stampeding across Siberia anytime soon. So we have time to talk about this. But I think it's important that we do talk about this. And as I say, I think it has the potential to be an interesting tool. And whenever I go out there, and Wilderness has been brilliant, whenever you go out there and you start talking to people, they think it's Jurassic Park, right? And when you go, no, it's a bit more subtle than that, and the dinosaurs are not coming back, people generally are in favour of it. And the other thing is that, you know, you kind of imagine these crazy scientists with Einstein hair and white coats who are doing things and not giving a damn what scientists think. I've spoken to pretty much every single research team involved in a de-extinction project, and all of them are proceeding very, very cautiously, and they're listening to public opinion. And so we're not about to see these things being released into the wild anytime soon, and if and when we do, it will be hopefully with the blessing of the culture and the society that will be around this animal in the site of its release. So I think it's important we talk about this.
It's Einstein rather than Frankenstein.
I like that. Einstein rather than Frankenstein. That's good.
With Philip just about to go on stage, I introduced him to Helen Pilcher to find out what she was hoping to take home from his talk.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing you speak.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, yeah. As you say, I really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you very much.
I thought it was hugely entertaining as well as... Yeah. as well as pertinent and poignant too.
Thank you. So Helen, you're a bit of a fan of Philip in that you've read the book, you're reading the book now. What are you expecting from his presentation today?
I'm expecting to be made to think long and hard about the sort of life that I lead and the sort of food I put on my children's plate, and to be challenged, I hope, to be challenged to do things differently, ethically, with a view on the long-term future. And also hopefully to come away feeling quite positive that by changes to the way that we eat could have these long-term positive changes for wildlife. I feel really, really passionately about wildlife. I've been interested in natural history, like yourself, since I was a child, and feel devastated and intermittently quite gloomy about what's happening out there with this massive biodiversity crisis. And it was a real eye-opener for me to read Philip's book and to realise that what I'm putting on my plate is having these sort of indirect sort of ripples on the wildlife that's out there in sort of close by with barn owls and in the, you know, further away with elephants. But it feels quite empowering. What I'm waiting for from Philip is to learn how I can do things differently and to feel empowered to make a positive change, and that what I put in my basket when I go to the shops every week can make a real positive difference to the wildlife that's out there. So I'm really looking forward to Philip's talk.
And that is the whole point of you, isn't it, Philip? You are ultimately very optimistic. You're not one of these doom people.
Absolutely. I believe that we have to have hope, and that there's something we can all do 3 times a day to stop farm animal cruelty, to save wildlife too, and save you from your suspense. Scrolling to the end, the message is to eat less and better meat from pasture-fed, free-range and organic animals. This is a way which is not only great for wildlife and farm animal welfare, but also much better nutritionally for our families too.
Now, you're a mum. You've brought your kids.
Yes.
They're having a great time at Wilderness. You're going to sprinkle them with glitter. Philip was also saying that actually he feels like he needs to be sprinkled with glitter.
I don't know if
you can help with that one.
We must do that.
How important is it for you to bring your kids? How important is it to actually bring your kids here to hear all these messages and to get them thinking at their age? How old are they?
I have 2 9-year-olds and I have a 12-year-old. They're not clones, my children, I hasten to add. They're natural twins. I think it's really, really important. I think the most important thing we can do with our kids is inspiring them a sense of curiosity and a spark and an interest in the world around them, so that they don't just passively absorb what they're taught at school, but that they challenge, they think, they question. And that's what I want my kids to do. I do not mind what they become when they grow up, so long as they're happy and they think and they're curious. And if one of them wants to be a scientist, that's great. I suspect that won't happen. Footballer, actress, pop star, they're all on the list at the moment. That may change as time goes on. But I think the single most important thing is having your eyes opened and thinking about the world. And that's why Wilderness is so brilliant, because everybody here kind of dares to be different.
Yeah, and I became a wildlife enthusiast when I was a kid. I was 8 years old. And I learned about factory farming when I was about 15, due to a talk in school. We didn't have any internet way back then, about 200 years ago. But, you know, it's very important to spread these messages, to talk to children and to inspire them.
Philip explained why Helen's de-extinction argument is so important to his own campaign to end factory farming.
I think it's very relevant, and I have to say that Helen Pilcher is a very entertaining speaker, and her book, Bringing Back the King, really is talking about the scientific ability to bring back an extinct species. I think where I'm coming from with Dead Zone, where the wild things were, is an argument which is saying, look, we all have the power 3 times a day through our food choices, not only to stop an awful lot of farm animal cruelty, but also to save wildlife from going extinct in the first place. And it seems to me that stopping creatures from going extinct is the first most purposeful thing that we can do.
And then it was time for Philip to change the world, one talk at a time.
The stark truth is that industrialised factory farming, driven by a desire for ever cheaper meat by an ever greater proportion of the world's population, is responsible for the loss of swathes of tropical forests around the world, the annihilation of marine ecosystems, and a life of misery for billions of farm animals each year. Tell us more about the link between the meat on your plate and the remorseless decline of our wild fauna. Please welcome the final speaker today, a true conservation hero, the CEO of Compassion in World Farming, and the author of a brilliant and crucially important book, Dead Zone. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Philip Limbury.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jim, and thank you all for being here. Thank you all for caring so much about wildlife and for being here to discuss how we can save wilderness. Not just the festival, but the wild places where animals and ecosystems that we depend on need to live and to thrive.
As Philip left the stage to rapturous applause, I had a chat with Noah, an English literature student from Bristol, glittered up and ready to change the world through her art.
So I'm interested really in how we can bridge arts and sciences together. Because at the moment, science is such a kind of exclusive area that arts people in, more interested in the arts either don't care about or aren't able to get into. And it seems like conservation is requires both sides, but neither side is really willing to work with each other at the moment. I've done a bit of student journalism and trying to educate or motivate university students to be sustainable in student lifestyles. So eating sustainably, not wasting food, not buying battery farmed eggs and that kind of thing, and how to live cheaply but also sustainably. But I think ultimately, for me personally, I'm more interested in kind of in creative outlets, so films, music, you know, things where messages can be more subliminally delivered, because people, unless you are a scientist or like me, you're an artist who's motivated to learn about these things, people don't care, and we need to find ways to make them care.
Did you hear Philip's talk?
Yes, I did, yeah.
How did you feel about the way that he told stories?
See, that's something that I was hoping that I might get to speak to Philip himself about, because I hope so.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Because
I'm
really noticed that about his talk. I said to my mum as he was talking, he speaks beautifully. And especially his image of like a river, like a serpent taking away from him. I think storytelling is 100% the way forward to educate and motivate people who aren't scientists.
Thanks for listening. Next month, we join Philip at the European Parliament in Brussels for Stop the Machine, the roundtable discussion and exhibition hosted by Dutch MEP Anja Hazekamp and Compassion in World Farming, which aims to expose factory farming as a major driver of wildlife extinction. To subscribe, you can find Stop the Machine in iTunes or on your podcast app, and go to ciwf.org.uk to find out more about Compassion's campaign to end factory farming. To buy tickets for the Extinction Livestock Conference in London, go to extinctionconference.com.